Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. It's a Farmer Friday. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to call in, our phone lines will be open all throughout the show. 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We are live in the Morton studio today, kind of right in the middle of harvest in our region of the country. Been out all week because of rainfall. And Darren, I know a lot of farmers are getting kind of depressed with all this, but I keep telling guys, you got to look on the bright side of things. And, you know, the crop actually does look like it's going to yield pretty well. So when we get out there, it's going to be fine. We've had situations before I just am remembering from years back. So I've been a full-time agronomist for almost 30 years now. And on our farm during that time, so I'm not talking about my entire lifetime, but at least during the last 30 years, you know, there have been a few wet falls, right? Every farmer that's been farming for 30 years or more can remember a few wet falls. That's just the way it goes. It's part of the deal. Usually things work out just fine. In the long run, it's going to be okay. There was one year in particular I remember we lost three different full weeks. So this week we lost full week. Well, that's one. We lost three full weeks one year on our farm, and we didn't have all the great equipment that we do today, and it was a struggle. It was the middle of November by the time we got done, but you know what? November turned out to be fantastic that year. And I always tell guys, just hang in there. Yeah, things are going to turn out okay. You just have to give it the best that that you've got, and it'll be all right. And, you know, we certainly feel for these people that have had tremendous amounts of rainfall, whether it was with the hurricane or not. You know, that's unfortunately just a part of farming. We have to deal with Mother Nature. And we also have to continue to plan ahead on how can we minimize the impact of what Mother Nature is going to bring. So one of the things that we look at a lot on our farm, we are actually the opposite of what we are this year. This year is going to be the wettest year ever for our area. But normally we're quite dry. So because of that, we have to really focus on our fertility, and for that matter, even weed control, insect control, disease control, because if you have any one mistake and you're dry, well, that mistake is just amplified. So right now we're putting together plans for our fertility program for our farm going into next year. And Darren, I want to talk to you a little about this elemental sulfur deal. So we are going to put a whole bunch of elemental sulfur on our farm.
To lower pH, yep. And to supply sulfur that our crops need.
Yes. And so Darren was giving me a hard time that, Brian, I think we're spending too much money. So I said,
I think you'll find this with Brian.
Yeah, I said, Darren, yep, you're right. Let's cut her back on some stuff.
Brian likes to go to the extreme. Now here's the thing.
Well, it's not really extreme, but I get excited about I see high pH, I want to fix it right away.
We got some pHs that are too high. And it's been interesting learning more about lime. We've used a lot of lime over the years, but what we're seeing in our climate, in our soils, is it's taking multiple years for that lime to come available and make its full impact, and certainly other growers would say the same thing around the country. But a lot of the studies that get done in other parts of the country, yeah, that gives us some guidelines to go by here, but it's not exactly an exact science that, well, it's going to happen exactly the same way every time. No, it's not. It's going to be different depending on environmental factors and so forth. Anyway, the lime took more time to break down than we thought. And so anyway, we thought the pH change was done, but nope, it was still going up. And in some cases, well, it didn't go up fast enough for us, and we put a little bit more lime on trying to get stuff up. And the other thing is we didn't do variable rate. We did variable place it, put it in some places and not in others. But in some areas where we could have put on 4-ton or 5-ton of this water treatment plant lime, which has a lot of water in it, so you're going to have to use more tons. But we were going to put 4 or 5 on, but our applicator could only do 6. So we ended up with a little more than we wanted. Anyway, the price has to be paid now. We've got pH that's too high. We've got adequate drainage under most of those spots. That's the first thing. And then if we have that, elemental sulfur in our area works very well at bringing pH down. Now, with some of our trial work that we've done with elemental sulfur, we've used extreme rates, 1,000 pounds an acre. And yep, we've dropped pH and we've dropped it pretty quick. The question is, okay, so we know 1,000 pounds works, but it works a little too well, so we don't need quite that much. what is the right rate in between? And that's what Brian's talking about here. Brian's like, well, let's go. Let's make sure we have enough, because it's easier to work with a low pH than to work with a pH that's too high. And I get that. And he's probably right about that part. I just thought, wow, we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars here. I'd rather figure out what the right rate is before we get carried away.
It'd probably be $50 an acre on at least a third of the farm.
Yeah, but if you told me, Brian, if you said, Darren, would you pay $50 an acre to get your 7.5 pH down to a 6.3, I would do it in a heartbeat.
For the long term. Now, that's the whole key here. We're not talking about changing it for 1 year. We're talking about changing it for a really long time.
Right, right. And you'd pay for it in 1 year.
Right.
The yield difference would pay for it in 1 year.
Yep, but basically what we're going to do is variable rate stuff. And on average, at the most, I would say on average on some of those acres that need this, we're going to spend $50. But we're going to cut it back. And so there'll be a lot of stuff that'll be in the range of $10 to $30 an acre. Well, that's not so bad, especially considering we need sulfur anyway. We're really low on sulfur. So we've got to have some sulfur out there. Elemental sulfur is really good. But here's the one thing that I want you to keep in mind. Two things. Number one, you have to make sure your drainage is great first. If you don't have your drainage great, I'm not talking good, I'm talking great. If you don't have your drainage great, then don't be trying elemental sulfur, because instead of it turning to sulfuric acid like we want that lowers the pH, it will turn to hydrogen sulfide and your soil is going to smell like rotten eggs and a bunch of stuff's going to die. So that's not good. Take care of your drainage first. If that's done, then you may consider elemental sulfur. If you consider elemental sulfur, take a look at the particle size. For example, we just have looked at a couple different sources for our own farm. One didn't dissolve as well, the other did. Why is that? It's particle size. We want a very small particle size so we get the pH change fast, as opposed to really slowly over 5 or 8 years.
All right, it's Farmer Friday on our show today. We're taking your calls and questions throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Farmers, wouldn't you love to have one set of concaves for all crops? With Estes Performance Concaves, you can. That means no more backbreaking work, changing concaves, or downtime. Plus, Estes Concaves stop rotor loss with less grain damage and a cleaner sample. It's the best money you can spend on your combine. Call 765-650-4131 or visit EstesPerformanceConcaves.com and take back your bushels. That's 765-650-4131.
Tired of having to babysit your grain bins, waiting to manually turn on fans until the weather's just right? Have you ever kicked yourself for losing an opportunity to better manage your stored grain? Operating the fans on your bins just got a lot easier with the Steps GMS app. The Steps GMS temperature humidity switch is a low-cost solution that allows you to operate bin fans according to your specifications. For more information, find us on Twitter at StepsGMS or visit us at StepsGMS.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem's Mesotrion herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco and Vilify, two new products powered by Bellum. For application flexibility and season-long control, that's Evinco and Vilify, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Avoid the V-shaped pattern of injury caused by chemical buildup in your booms. The Express End Cap from Hypro eliminates the dead ends that lead to herbicide buildup and provides easy access to your booms, giving a complete flush between applications. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. I'm pretty excited about it. We get to talk to you. And specifically, if you're listening today, call in. We would love to hear what's happening on your farm. We'd love to hear how harvest is going or what your yields are like or what questions you have for next year. What can we help you with? How can we help you make more money on your farm? We really honestly talk about this on a daily basis. What can we do on our farm to make it better and to get more yield? If you're looking for more yield, you'd like to do better next year, give us a call. We'd love to help you. Talking to Kevin right now in Pennsylvania. Kevin, how's it going?
Good, Darren. How are you?
Good, good. So what's happening on your farm?
Just in the combine today. We're in corn right now. Had some wet weather yesterday. We couldn't do anything. It was just too wet. But we're back in it today. We had some good wind last night. Stalks are running through nice. The yield is pretty high, so we're looking good right now.
Awesome, awesome. All right, so how would you classify this year's corn harvest in terms of yield? Are you getting your best ever? Are you having kind of average stuff? Was it a tough year? What would you say about 2018?
Yeah, so for us, we're having our best year.
Awesome.
Having said that, this is only our second year with corn, but we're doing good. So,
well, that's good.
We're hitting high. Yeah.
Well, if it wasn't your best year, Kevin, then it would be your worst. So that's good. That's the thing about being in year two is it's either the best ever or the worst ever. So I'm glad it's the best ever. That's a plus. Or this would be an uncomfortable call right now.
It will be. Yeah. If we go backwards, that's not good. But yeah, we're looking good right now there. And so, yeah.
Outstanding. What are soybeans like in your area? And have guys gotten into the beans yet?
Not a lot have, and that's the thing. I would have loved to have gotten all my soybeans off first in a perfect world and then go into my corn. But it has just not dried down with the wet weather and some of the weather patterns we've had, I think, in general. So, yeah, we're kind of all waiting to get into those beans.
We're in the same boat here in South Dakota. We're having a tough time getting into those beans, and looks like we may have an extended dry period coming up. At least that's what the weather forecast is. So, yeah, that's our thought is if we can get into those beans, we're going on beans until we're done. But in the meantime, we're picking away at some corn whenever we can.
Yep, same here. So hopefully we all get into it. Have an early quit this year, but I don't see it.
All right, so tell me about your cornfields then. As you're harvesting, you're seeing things that are good in terms of yield, but you're probably saying, oh, man, if I can only go back in time, I would change this. Or maybe you're doing some soil sampling and you're seeing, ooh, we were short in this and that would have helped us with yield. Is there anything that's popping out to you yet?
Yeah, exactly. So right now, some of the top things on my mind are, yeah, we can work better and they nutrients, things like that. You know, I see on my yield map in my monitor and so forth. We can do some variable rate, with fertilizer and some lime. And then the other thing would be drainage. And aside from that, probably we had some mold problems here and there. But those top three things, that's what's on my mind right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's good to have a target of here's what happened rather than if you would have said, Darren, you know what? It's just the rainfall this year. That's what our problem was. Or it was just the sunshine this year. We can't really control those two things. But when you start looking at the things you can control, it's pretty fun to start managing those, even though they cost money. It's fun to to change one of those things. Like you mentioned, drainage, improving that. It's fun to see that start to work on your farm.
It is, and we got to do a little bit that this summer with some places we just didn't plant. We got to tile those fields, and we plan on doing a lot more of that in the coming years, and yeah, I'm excited about it.
Do you run into rocks in your area? Is it a rocky area, or are you able to slide right through putting your tile in?
So, yeah, we do run into some rocks, some shale, things like that. The other big problem is just a spider web network of shallow gas wells in western PA. We have so many of those that we have to be careful. That can be an issue.
Huh, very interesting. Yeah, always something, isn't there? There's always something no matter where you're at. Hey, I've been talking with Kevin in Pennsylvania. He's right in the middle of corn harvest here, but still got some beans to go. Kevin, good luck here. We'll be thinking about you. Hopefully you get some good weather here and get her all wrapped up.
Thank you, Darren. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you later.
You bet. Get Trent with us right now down in Oklahoma. Trent, how are things going down there?
Well, we were all set up and had everything sprayed. We're fixing to start putting wheat in the ground, and we got 6 inches of rain.
Well, hey, at least when you get that wheat planted, it's going to have a little moisture to grow with.
Well, if we get it planted.
Yeah, it's.
I might be calling you guys and adding about 2,500 acres of beans.
Yeah, I know. No kidding. Well, and here's the interesting thing, too. It can turn around in a hurry, just like it was great and ready to go, and then boom, we're super wet. You get the sun out, and you're in Oklahoma, not in North Dakota, so chances are you could still have a warm day or two yet, and all of a sudden you get the wind that I know you guys can get in your area.
Yeah, we get a little.
and it can turn around in a hurry, so I'm pretty confident. Okay, so talk about this wheat that you're putting in. What are you doing? Are you doing anything different this year with the wheat in terms of population or fertility or any kind of management?
I'm sticking with pretty much the same population. We always shoot for at least 1 million. We try to go to anywhere between 1.1 and 1.2. This year, the seed size is a little smaller, so we don't have to plant near as much as we did last year, which is kind of nice. But normally, the later we get, we'll continue to up the population, you know. But hopefully right now, we're still okay, and we'll shoot for that. I think we're about 1.15 right now, and we did our normal seed treatments, like, you know, fungicide, insecticide, all that stuff. And then this year I'm putting on your guys' Heat Shield NutriCycle, so I'm going to try that out.
Going to do a little copying of the program here. I see. Now, I'll say this. In our wheat plots at the Ag PhD Field Day site this year, I was the winner, Trent, so you'd be wise to follow my program. But I'm just teasing with you. Okay, so tell me about nitrogen, because we get a lot of differences as we talk to wheat farmers all over that. Some guys like to put a lot of nitrogen out up front. Some guys want to wait and put it on later. What's your strategy? What's normally done in your area?
Well, unless there's a lot of guys that run cattle around here still, and they'll graze their wheat. If they do that, I mean, I hate to be talking about guys like this, but they go out there starting in August and they're putting anhydrous down, and they're putting a bunch of anhydrous down. Me personally, I think it's a terrible idea. It's just too hot to be putting anhydrous down, but that's the way they've done it for years, and that's how it goes. So you got guys here that put a bunch out front, but the guys that are doing grain only, like us, we normally wait till – I like to try to do two shots, but sometimes the timing doesn't work out. But we'll for sure wait till middle of February, and we'll go out there and put a pretty heavy shot on. And if everything's looking good in March, then I'd like to go out and put a little bit more on. With that first pass, I like to try to put a little bit of sulfur out there with it, and then come back in March and put stream bar a little bit more on. That's the goal.
Yep. Yeah, I like that stream bar application. That's been that's worked well for us too. And I like that you mentioned sulfur, because that's one where we talk about nitrogen a lot, and I probably should have brought that up also. But we like getting that sulfur out there too, and we really see some response. Now, when you look at this wheat too, any micros? You doing anything with micros this year? Or you got bigger fish to fry?
I'm going to try some stuff this year. I believe it was called, Tyler. I've been
like a micro blend
there. It was like a corn mix.
Okay, sure.
That's what it was called.
Yeah, there's
I tried putting some of that on, because I've never done micros before. So I was going to see what that was like.
Yeah, the blended micro is a good place to start. So I'm glad you said that, because you'll cover quite a few bases, and then you just have to see what the soil tests dictate. We've done a lot of that work too, where we put on a blend until we get everything up to a halfway decent level, then we start targeting in on some of the specific ones. Well, Trent, hey, I got to let you run here. Thanks for the call today. Really appreciate it. Good luck planting that wheat out there. It's Farmer Friday on our show today. We'll be back with more of your calls and questions after this.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contan's WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contan's this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Go to whitemoldcontrol.com to learn more about the Contan's no-risk guarantee. Start a Contan's white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
BASF presents 5 Things to Do After Harvest. Number 5, read all mail received since April. Number 4, put on your marketing hat. Number 3, clean 4 tons of dirt off your equipment. Number 2, clean 2 pounds of dirt off your boots. And number 1, analyze your results and plan for next year. From all of us at BASF to growers everywhere, thanks for all your hard work during Harvest 18. Grow smart with BASF. We create chemistry.
Innovation is key to successful farming. Our innovative Thrive 3D application system saves you water, fuel, labor, and time. Get yours at no cost with FMC Freedom Pass. Simply commit to 3-year purchase minimums of Capture Thrive 3D insecticide and Anthemax herbicide to farm faster and with more freedom. Get more details at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass. Always read and follow label directions. Capture Thrive 3D insecticide is a restricted use pesticide. Anthemax herbicide and Capture Thrive 3D insecticide are not registered for sale or use in California.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday, taking your calls and questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email at radio@agphd.com or find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Let's head out to Illinois. We've got Brian with us right now. How are you doing today, Brian?
Okay. Hey, I'm here in Chicago because it's raining. So I came up to use some owns.
You know, Chicago is one of those places that we always hope that they're very well aware of bad weather when we get it. Because it seems like if somebody from Chicago says, wow, the Midwest is getting great weather, then all of a sudden our markets seem to suffer.
Yeah, well, I'm right down the street from the Board of Trade. I know what that's like. It rains on LaSalle Street, and they think everybody's getting rain.
Yes.
So right now, you know, and those guys at LaSalle Street at the Board of Trade, they think that all this rain we're getting right now, it's probably good.
Yeah, it's probably helping.
Rain makes grain. Okay, I won't go there.
No. It is fun, though. And Brandon and I have a cousin that's worked as a grain trader for a lot of years, and so it's fun to tease a little bit. And, you know, and some of those guys, like our cousin, grew up on a farm, and some guys do and some guys don't. And so, that's kind of an interesting business for sure. So what's happening back home on the farm?
Well, actually, I've only been back a couple of weeks. I went and rode my bicycle in Europe again, and I timed it just wrong. Once again, I came back and it started raining. So I'm going to ask all your people that are listening to this that they, you know, take a collection. I'll go back to Europe so it dries up, number one, but they got to come harvest my crops too.
I tell you what, there'd be a lot of takers on that one right now. There's some pretty wet areas of the country. I've been looking at some of the pictures on the East Coast. Has been, wow, that's something else. And I know, like where you're at in the Midwest too, it's been pretty tough. So yeah, you know, when
you get, we'll be in the field on Monday probably.
What are you hearing for yields right around where you farm?
Down a little bit from last year, but last year was my all-time best. 3 years in a row of excellent yields, but yes, last year was like my absolute best ever. So the guys that have done the surveys and things, they say it's going to be down a little bit. I don't know what my neighbors are actually getting, but you know, if we're down to only 250, we're still probably doing okay.
Yeah, that's not too bad, I guess. So what are you thinking about for this fall? I guess you got to get harvest done. Do you do a lot of tillage? Do you do fertility? What's the game plan on your farm?
Well, I no-till everything. So my biggest challenge at this point will be planting some cover crop.
Yep.
And, you know, getting it established and going, and then just wait until spring, basically, because usually I fertilize early in the spring.
Okay.
And then put on the nitrogen whenever the field conditions are such.
Sure.
That you can get her in there, because I'm in a couple of programs, the CSP program, where I pledge not to use anhydrous ammonia in the fall.
Okay.
So I have to get it on in the spring. So that's my main concern in the spring, is getting the anhydrous on.
Okay. You know, you mentioned planting a cover crop and getting that going. Do you have a certain cover crop you like to use? And then do you have kind of a drop dead date that if it gets past this date, I'm not going to do the cover crop?
Well, yes and no for all that stuff. First of all, the only way I've ever done cover crop is by aerial seeding. And I've given up on that, because it just doesn't seem to work for me. And I've tried different mixes. Ryegrass seems to be the one that everybody's gravitating to, because the other things are so darn unpredictable.
Sure.
And so then I've also, this will be the first year that I've drilled it in. So I just can't drop it in the crop in August or something like we've done in the past. The results are too erratic. So yeah, this will be the first year I've actually tried to drill it in. It'll just be rye. And my challenge will be doing different rates of rye, just so I can experiment and see what I actually need to put on for my purposes, as opposed to having three bushels an acre or something like that.
Sure,
I don't want to do that.
Sure. Yep. Well, we're already starting to get some feedback, Brian, with a pots being started to raise some funds to send you back overseas, if that's what it takes to dry things out. So you never know. You might be getting a plane ticket in the mail.
Yeah, well, it might work. So this year, just so other farmers know what's going on in other parts of the world, I actually started from Amsterdam again, but this time I went north along the Baltic Sea. And pretty much, I'd say about 80% of it was drought. The corn, which they don't really raise good corn. It's kind of like one of these things, they mostly raise it for dairy. But their yields were way down. Had to be, because sometimes there weren't even ears on the stalks.
Wow.
And they're chopping this stuff. So I don't know how big of a band that was, but it was throughout Germany and Poland, the parts of Poland I went through. You just look and you just wouldn't see any good corn hardly at all. And a lot of it's sandy, rocky soil. But still, those guys were used to raising better crops, and way better crops than what they were getting this year. So that's just a heads up. I don't know if it'll impact the market at all. I doubt it. But they were unhappy, those farmers. With
yeah, that's too bad. We don't wish drought on anybody. That's for sure. Well, hey, Brian.
No.
We'll let you run here. Hopefully, you can get back to farming again the start of next week. And good luck. Stay safe.
Okay. Thank you. Bye bye.
We've got Mark with us right now down in Indiana. Mark, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing today?
We're doing well. Doing well. How's harvest progressing in your area?
Well, kind of recapping, I guess, going back a little bit, the wheat came in about 50 to 90 bushels an acre. The corn really was about half of what it should have been due to drought. And then the other side of that, doing some really bad storms, knocking it down. They maxed out, I think, 180, 190 bushels, but the average was only 125. So that's half of what we normally experience. So it was pretty bad year for that.
Yeah, that's no fun.
We had a good planting start for the corn. They had about 2 weeks of good weather, and then it got wet, and the beans got in late, and that kind of bumped up against getting the wheat out. It got wet then, so the second crop of beans got in late, but the beans look good. I haven't been back up there. I'm the guy that drives, your brother laughed at me, drives 6 hours one way to get to the farm that I lease for wildlife.
And, yes, I remember that, Mark. We were talking about that.
Here's a secret. I had an epiphany this year.
What's that?
I listening to you guys, I had a problem last year with water hemp. I thought it was becoming resilient on my farm to Roundup. I put in a real-world wildlife bean for the wildlife that's Roundup ready. So
yep.
And it's also shatter resistant. I can leave it stand until March, and it's still on the stalk if I need it. But what I wasn't doing was getting out there quick enough with the mileage involved. So I said, you know, 12 hours round trip, I can probably pay somebody else while they're out there to do my little bit.
Yep.
And I was money ahead, and that was my big problem. You guys were spot on in that I just wasn't getting to it soon enough. So I've got spots that are still down the bare dirt where it just hadn't grown, but they're also weed-free. So, you know, appreciate the information for that part of it.
Yeah, you bet. Glad that's working out for you. So what else are you thinking about going into next year?
Well, we got a little, we're the wildlife people, so we got some unique stuff going on. The USDA came up and they did some survey for the ground that is, you know, like waterway ground or just left for erosion control. And they're concerned of all things of the monarch butterfly population being decimated. So if we would plant milkweed, they'll lay their eggs on the milkweed. The caterpillars will eat the milkweed and get a toxin in them that makes them kind of bad tasting to other insects and birds, and then we'll have more pollinators. So they're helping out with that. We're putting the milkweed out. We're also putting rye out for cover crops, and they also wanted us to do some erosion control with the terraces and the piling. So that's keeping them busy right now. I think it's raining, so they're not doing a whole lot, but that's the game plan.
Yeah, I know. People have been talking about this monarch butterfly thing, and I don't have any problem if people want to seed milkweeds, but the problem I do have on my own farm is I can't bring myself to seed something that literally has weed in the name. So that one's kind of a tough one for me. Well, hey, Mark, thanks a lot for calling in today. We really appreciate it, and best of luck to you here the rest of this fall.
Yeah, thanks for all the help and information. I'll be listening.
All right, sounds great. Appreciate it. Once again, it is Farmer Friday. We would love to hear from you. If you want to call in, talk about anything going on your farm, or if you got any questions for us, we'd love to take your call. 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We'll take more of your calls and get to the AgPhD mailbag right after this.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. patients to learn about your operation, and patients to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today on Farmer Friday. We're taking your calls and questions all throughout the show today. We'd love to hear how things are going on your farm, or if you have any agronomic questions impacting this year's crop or what you're going to do getting ready for next year's. We'd love to talk about that. So please call in. All right, let's get back to the phone lines. We got Kevin with us right now. And there we go. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Doing good. How are you guys?
Good, good. What's happening in your area?
Well, we're sitting still right now. We got a couple inches of rain here at the beginning of the week, and so we're sitting still, but we're not going to complain about rain out here where we are. So we're winter wheat crop was needing it. We got it up and got it started, and it was going to need a drink, and we got it. So we're not minding too much. We're shut down for a little bit here.
So is that what you have yet to do this fall? Is your harvest done? Do you have any other crops that you're harvesting yet?
I'd say we're between half and three quarters done on corn, and then we've got a little milo left to go, and most of our dry land corn's out. It's mainly just irrigated and lemon water irrigated that we have left to go on corn.
Sure.
And wheat's already, we've drilled all our wheat except for, we had one circle of pinto beans that we'd like to get some in behind, but I don't know whether the weather's going to cooperate enough. They're calling for 19 degrees here Sunday night, so I don't know whether the weather's going to what is going to happen. So we're going to see play that in my ear.
What's your normal cutoff date for how, in other words, how late will you seed your winter wheat?
Normally what we try to do is we usually start about the 12th or so of September. Yep. And, you know, it'd be nice to be done by the end of September or the very beginning of October. We get much past that. I mean, you can try bumping the rates, and I mean, you just never know if you have a, what we call an Indian summer or something, and it, you know, you might get by, but if you were on an ideal year, you wouldn't want to go too late into October. There are guys that do, and like I say, sometimes it works, but normally we're at this end of September is kind of, if I had to drill everything on one day, it'd be somewhere in the 20-somethingth of September.
Yep. So let me ask you this about your crops this year, everything that you have harvested so far. Is there anything that you saw that you did this year on your farm that really stood out? Would it be weed control, disease control, insects, fertility? I mean, anything new and different that you tried, or just any general practice you did this year that you say, oh, yeah, that really paid this year?
One of the things, and it was this summer when we cut our wheat, I had a field that when I top dressed, I threw some folic acid in, and, you know, I didn't need a test strip, so I don't want to say for sure, but it was really good test weight on that stuff. I mean, it was 64.5-pound test weight, and, you know, the guy, that friend of mine that sold it to me, he said that's what he's seen, and so I'm interested in trying more with that. And if that doesn't help with some test weight stuff. And we also had used some humic acid when we planted it. So some of those things we've been using now for several years and liking them, building up some soil health and things like that. I tried some brown sugar in furrow with my Milo, trying to fight some iron deficiency coulorosis and stuff like that. And that stuff looked like $1 million coming up out of the ground. And it's something else I want to keep trying and playing with is some brown sugar and stuff like that.
Interesting.
And so I could give you a long list of things that I did wrong this year. You know, as a young farmer, it seems like that list is longer than the list you got right.
Hey, our dad always told us, don't get too worried about the mistakes. I mean, that's how you learn, and you're going to get better. The goal is to get better every year. So believe me, we make mistakes all the time too. And we've been farming for quite a lot of years now. So that's part of the whole deal. So give me like one thing, let's just say, that you did this year where you go, oh yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that again.
Well, I had some corn I farm some of my own, and I also work. I'm a hired man on another guy's operation.
Sure.
But one of my fields of corn, it was so dry in the spring, and so I was gun shy about putting out a ton of fertility, mm-hmm. Because I was afraid this thing was going to drop out. Yep. Of course, and that was the one field that got all the rain all summer, and it caught me. And my wife and I, we had a baby this summer, and the one week I was gone was the week I kind of. Thank you. I missed the scouting a week, and so I come back, and I was like, oh, man, you can see the bottom leaves starting to fire. I was like, crud, I've got to, it always happens that one week you miss, week things fall out. But it's kind of one of those things that you need to, plan for the best to some degree. I mean, obviously, you got to use wisdom, but I should have thrown a little more fertility out there to get started with. But live and learn. So
yeah, I'm with you though. It is especially tough when you're a beginning farmer. You don't have a lot of extra dollars, and for us that have been farming for a long time and we're pretty established now, I don't mind if I put some extra dollars out there and the fertilizer comes available next year or things like that. But boy, when you're young, it's tough. Believe me, I remember those days. Hey, Kevin, thanks for calling in today. Appreciate it. Best of luck with the rest of your harvest here.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yep. Thank you. All right, let's go next to Lawrence, who's calling in from Minnesota. Hey, Lawrence, how are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
I hear you have a question for us.
Yes. This year, for my corn and my starter fertilizer, for the first year, put NutriCycle in with it.
Okay.
And I got a question going ahead into next year.
Yep.
Adding also Ethos XB, would that have an adverse effect to some of the biologicals in the NutriCycle?
I don't really think so. We've mixed different products that have biologicals in there, and that's basically, so the Ethos, you've got Capture LFR and a biological in there.
Yeah, it's a bacillus, right? Bacillus amyliquefaciens, that it?
Yep, and so we've done it with multiple biologicals, and it's very rare when we have any issues. But yes, it's an appropriate and good question for you to ask that. Now, we haven't done exactly Ethos with a number of other things, but that particular biological, we're not too worried about. The capture part, in other words, that biological that's in Ethos, there's virtually zero chance that's going to have any adverse effect
on anything else. That's not a problem at all.
Right.
And then the capture. Safe. Yeah, it's safe with the capture, so that's good.
And I was going to say the capture, the insecticide, isn't going to hurt any of the biologicals at all that you're going to throw in there. So we don't see there would be any problem. As always, we just tell people, jar test first and make sure you don't have any mixing issues. But from all the information we have, we believe that would be a legitimate mix and it should work just fine.
Okay. Well, like I say, I've been using Capture, but I've been looking into next year going with the Ethos XB. And I know a few weeks ago you were talking about some biologicals and things not working out or not agreeing with each other. And no use spending the money if it ain't going to help.
One of the things we do get concerned about from time to time is not really on that side with insecticides, but it's with certain fungicides. If you have fungal products, then you've got to make sure, because obviously a fungicide, its job is to kill fungus. So if you're going to throw a bunch of beneficial fungi out there, you've got to make sure that particular fungicide doesn't kill off that fungus that you're you're putting out there that you hopefully will help. Not all fungicides. Well, no fungicide is going to kill all fungus species. So you just have to find the right one and talk to your supplier on that kind of thing. But there are a lot more biologicals coming down the road, too. I talked to all these great big companies, and boy, they got a lot of stuff in the works. So it'll be interesting as we go forward, and I think we're going to continue to find better and better products all the time. So it's exciting.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, thanks for the call, Lawrence.
Thank you.
You bet.
All right, we got a number of questions that have come in to the Ag PhD mailbag. Brian, there's one that came in from Nigeria, and the question was, where do I find more agronomic information that we could use in Nigeria?
Yeah, one of the things that I would tell you that's great anymore is just having access to information through the internet. So we have a lot of our Ag PhD, pretty much all of our Ag PhD videos, our shows on YouTube. You can podcast our radio show. We're putting out information all the time through our website and through other sites. So you can just continue to check out agphd.com on the internet.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Ag PhD Radio.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
One thing growers need to succeed is freedom to choose what they put in their fields. That's why FMC Freedom Pass Agronomic Rewards make it easy and economical to pair your favorite seed brand with products proven to protect crops throughout the season. Choosing Authority brand herbicides and other proven FMC products pays more than ever before. Calculate your potential incentive at fmcagus.com/fmcfreedompass today. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides are not registered for sale or use in California.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. Going to dip into the Ag PhD mailbag here, take some more of these email questions that have come in. This one's from Justin in Oklahoma. He said, I've got a cation exchange capacity of 8. I have 30 pounds of nitrogen already in my soil. Should I only add 50 more, or will the plant take up the nitrogen so quickly, raising wheat or fescue, that I could do the common practice for the area, which is to apply 100 to 150 pounds N right after it emerges. Our goal is for grazing and for hay in the spring. Hey, thanks for the question, Justin. Really appreciate that. You know, the grazing is interesting. We were just talking to another farmer from Oklahoma earlier, and he was saying, you know, for the guys that want to graze, a lot of them are putting on the N in the fall like that. What do you think, Brian, with an 8 CEC?
Well, that's quite a bit. It's really quite a bit. You are going to use some right away, but you're not going to use a whole lot. It's going to take a while. Now, it depends on how early you're seeding, how big the wheat's going to get, all that type of thing in terms of how much you're going to use. But if you've already got 30 there and you're going to throw on another 100, that's 130 pounds. Are you going to have that used up before winter or early spring? No way. I don't see that, not with the typical yields in your area. So, and in fact, you're not even close. But the whole question here is leaching. Are we going to lose some to leaching? You're putting yourself at a little bit of a risk. Your soil can only hold roughly, and this isn't exact, but if you've got an 8 CEC, we talk about 80 pounds of nitrogen. So if you're going to have 130 to possibly as much as 180 pounds sitting out there, you're only going to maybe use 30 or 50 pounds. You're really pushing it. So if it was me, would I do that? No way. No, I would not. My advice to you would be don't do it. Only put out about 50 pounds right now and then put some more on later. If you want to put even 80 pounds or something, you know, that's probably okay. You're maybe going to use 30 right away. But to think that I'm going to put as much as 150 pounds, no. 100 pounds, you're getting close. Okay, so I don't have a real huge problem with 100 pounds. But 150, that's pushing it too far, in my opinion, in your area.
Great. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. Got one from Curtis, and Curtis is in southern Indiana. He said, here's my rotation. I'm a no-tiller, raising corn, followed by winter wheat, and then after the winter wheat, I do double crop soybeans. So I'm getting three crops in 2 years. But here's my challenge. Even though I'm spraying a couple times in my corn crop and my soybean crop, I've got cheat and wild oats that I'm really struggling with when I get into that winter wheat rotation, and it's kind of starting to creep out from the edges of the field each year. I'm wondering what can be used in winter wheat to control cheat and to control wild oats that isn't going to hurt my beans. One of my neighbors suggested PowerFlex, wondering what you think about that. My chemical guy in the area says we haven't really had great luck with PowerFlex, but I'm concerned about, would this be okay for me if I'm going to double crop beans right after it? Good question here, Curtis. You know, PowerFlex has got a 5-month rotational restriction to soybeans. So that certainly comes into play. But let's say that you're spraying for those wild oats in the fall.
Wait, wild oats or cheatgrass?
Wild oats and cheat, both.
Yeah, but you just said spraying for wild oats. Wild oats, we can use some products with no residual. But if we're spraying for cheat,
okay, let's talk about them separate. So right. Cheat, you're right. Cheat, you get into PowerFlex kind of thing. And you could also use Prepare as a pre to take out some of it.
Yep.
The other thing, since you've just got it around the end rows,
exactly.
That's pretty useful.
Yeah, so if it was me, I might consider spot spraying. So I may go as far as to say I'd do preparing the whole thing at a nice low rate, spend $3 or $4, that's it. But if you're going to rotate to beans and it's going to be next summer, you'd really have to be concerned about exactly what you're doing. So in that case, maybe I do no prepare and I just do PowerFlex. And I might just do it around the borders. You want to get it as early as possible. The smaller the cheat is, the better luck you will have at getting it under control. But no, I realize it's a tough one. Here's the other thing that I would say. In your corn and your beans, you have to make absolutely 100% sure that you get this stuff under control. So you don't have any going into your wheat year. One last thing I'm going to throw out here. When he said borders, and this is something that I find almost no farmers do, but I got taught this by some really great farmers years ago. They would go out and just spray the outside, 8, 10, 12 rows of all their fields. So we'd now do that. And yes, I realize you can say it's an extra trip, but how long does it take if all you're doing is bordering every field? And we'll go out and hit the outside edges and even depending on what we're spraying, we may be able to spray into the fence line with herbicide and also insecticide, because that's typically where we have our bug problems. It's typically where we have our highest weed pressure. And that way we get stuff right away. Because, and let me just challenge you with this. If you scout your fields, where do you see the weeds come up first? It's almost always around the end rows or around waterways. Go spray those. Now, some guys will do crazy things, like some of the guys I'm talking about years ago, they do double rates around those areas. I'm not big on that, because now you're doing off-label stuff, and we can't do that. But what you can do is do a normal rate and then go hit it early post, and then we're going to hit it at normal time post with the rest of the field. So you start doing things like that, and then, because my guess is, here's what's happening to you. The cheatgrass is showing up in these edges. We're not getting them completely controlled with the soybeans and corn, and then we've got a problem when we go into wheat. So I'm thinking about all those things, and that's some of my advice for you.
All right, thanks for the question. Brian, we got a call, Dan from Oklahoma. He's wondering, somebody was just talking about brown sugar getting mixed in with seed. I'm wondering why they would do that and what's their goal. I've never heard of anything like that. Thanks, Dan. Thanks for the question. Was he talking about the sugar going in with the starter fertilizer, Brian?
Yeah, he said in furrow. And he also said iron deficiency, which I thought was interesting because, you know, in Milo, that's not a typical problem.
Yeah, so why would you put sugar in the furrow? You're trying to feed the microbes, trying to feed the soil microbes. And there are quite a few guys that actually do this. Now, the caution is that when you're putting a carbon source out there trying to feed microbes, it feeds good microbes and it feeds bad microbes. It doesn't really segregate. So you have to be careful about that. But for the most part, if you've got good microbes that you're putting in, and like here he said he was using a product called NutriCycle, which has a bunch of different beneficial biologicals in there, fungi and bacteria and so forth. If you're putting the good guys out there and you're feeding them, you've got more chance of success. So it'd be something if you wanted to try that, to say, okay, I'm going to do it on half the field and then not on the other half, or I'm going to do every other strip through the field with the sugar as well, just to see what kind of difference you get. So I know at the Ag PhD Field Day site, we'll have plots. We'll have a lot of high-yield growers that we're working with on corn and soybeans and small grains and other things. There are a number of those guys that will request that we put some form of sugar right in the furrow. And I know if you're looking in farm magazines or reading some of these yield champs, what they do, they'll say the same thing. They like to put that in there. So it's something that we do occasionally. It's not a standard practice for our farm, but who knows? We'll see where it heads down the road. Got a question from Todd here in Nebraska. He said, I planted rice for a cover crop. I put down 50 pounds of N and 5 pounds of sulfur. I'm wondering, can I use those calculations next spring to reduce my fertilizer for my corn crop that I'll be planting? I plan on grazing with my cattle out there for about 30 days. It's going to be no-till. So really, all the vegetation from that crop will stay in the field.
Not really. Didn't he say he's grazing it?
Yep.
Yeah, so that's not correct. I want you to think about it this way. If the cattle are going to grow, they're going to get bigger and fatter, they have to use something, right? So yes, there's going to be some manure out there, but what's going to be left exactly? I don't think you can use those calculations. I really don't. And also, when things go to manure, you know what happens with that. Some of it's organic, some of it's inorganic. So in other words, it's going to be like a slow release. So no, you can't use those. Maybe a tiny percent, but not much.
Like everything else, Todd, we would recommend you soil test. So you're going to put corn in, pull a soil test, and just see where you're at and see what you've got. It's such a small amount of fertilizer that you're putting out there too. I would not count that towards next year's crop.
Nope. If you're going to count anything, 10 or 20%, that'd be about it.
Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. And thanks for all the questions and calls that we got today. Really had a fun Farmer Friday. Be sure to listen each weekday to Ag PhD and stay tuned now for Shark Farmer Radio.